Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hello.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing the show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com and be sure to tell us where you're from. And every episode, we link to everything we talk about in the episode in the show notes. And to see the show notes, just go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page. And this is episode 28.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Casey, you went on another field trip.
I did. I didn't have to go far, but...
Well, this is really good because this applies to a lot of the questions we get mm-hmm. on the show. A lot of questions I just get in email and everything else. So tell us what you did.
Okay. I went to my chiropractor. His name is Stephen Reinley, and he's with Next Level Chiropractic here in Austin. And I had been going to see him because I was having lots of neck and shoulder pain. It's a combination of my computer and knitting and a workout that I was doing. So he fixed me right up. And when a couple questions came through the podcast about posture and things like that, so I thought it would be best to ask an expert on posture and muscles and all that good stuff instead of us. We know knitting. We don't know anatomy.
Right. Yes.
So that's what I did.
Okay, let's go ahead and listen.
Okay. I came to you and I was having shoulder pain probably from knitting and also computer work. So we talked about this, but what are some things to be looking for when we're sitting there watching movies and working on our knitting, posture-wise, that kind of thing?
I would liken this to people texting, or I've got a lot of clients that are into their PhDs here at UT Austin. I have a handful of dentists that are constantly sitting and twisting, turning their bodies, working with fine tools and obviously people's mouths. And I would say knitting falls into this category as well. Repetitive use over and over, doing a very similar thing constantly. I know people like to knit for long periods of time, so not getting enough breaks. So kind of if I were to give like a top three things maybe, I would say is make sure that you take some breaks frequently. So, you know, some of you might have sedentary style jobs and you know, hey, I got to get up and go to the bathroom or get some water. So your knitting is probably in that world too. If you get really glued in and stuck on working on something, set a little alarm on your phone or something like that every 45 minutes. Just get up, take a quick little break, you know, let the dog out, something like that. Come back, pick it up where you left off. So that's good. That's a good way just to kind of give your body some variability in its activities. So that would be a big thing, is just taking some breaks. Next thing I would work on is your workstation. So some of you might be knitting like in a recliner or a chair or something as you're watching TVs or TV or movie or something. Try to get your workstation maybe more in front of you. So if you get like one of those rollaway TV trays that's kind of comes over your lap, that would be maybe a great way to modify, so you're not having to be kind of turned to the left or turned to the right if your stuff is on like a lamp table or a side table, something like that. So try to get things more in front of you so your body can have the opportunity to maybe not be twisted or turned to the left or right. Get your posture a little bit more upright. And then the final thing I would say is just be cognizant of where your utensils and whatever it is you're working on is in relative to your eyes. A lot of this stuff is going to be guided a little bit by eyes. And if your head is kind of cranked down, there's a common thing now in the medical world we call text neck. So if your head's cranked down, you're really working on something, that can also lead to problems, just prolonged positioning with our head forward. An analogy we use in our world is if you're going to hold a bowling ball, because a human head weighs anywhere from 8 to 12 pounds, if you're going to hold a bowling ball in your arm and hand, you'd probably hold it with your hand and wrist cocked back a little bit to kind of balance that ball in that type of position, versus if you were to take that bowling ball and grip it and start putting your hand more towards upright position or even bending forward, you're going to really fatigue out your forearm and hand real quick. And your head is no different. So those muscles in your neck, if your head is cocked way forward or flexed forward, you can start to fatigue out those muscles pretty quick. So I would say positioning, variability, and trying to get things up to eye level, just like your ergonomics at a computer desk, those are going to be very important for someone that does a lot of knitting.
Yeah. So what are some things that we should look for when it's time to get professional help?
Definitely. So anytime that you have a problem that you're having trouble solving, so unrelenting pain that doesn't go away with after stopping your activity, you know, it's one thing to feel maybe a little tight or some discomfort and it goes away within 20 minutes or so, but it's another thing where it lingers and sticks with you. If you start feeling clumsy with your hands, you're just like, oh man, this is becoming a little bit more challenging. Definitely, that could be a first sign that you could be running down the, I'm starting to lose some of the nerve sensation and coordination in my fingers. As you've told me, the carpal tunnel is a pretty prominent thing in the knitting world. So don't wait until you lose all the sensation in your hand where it's numb, tingly. It's like, I don't know what happened. Or, you know, if you notice some of those things, maybe it's worth getting checked out. Definitely numbness and tinglies, that can be driven from just the overuse of working the muscles in your forearm. The common thing obviously is carpal tunnel, but I commonly see in my clinic carpal tunnel misdiagnosed when really it could be what's called pronator teres syndrome. That also affects the same nerve, which is your median nerve. But it's affected a little bit further up your forearm, closer to your elbow. And that's where that nerve goes through a muscle there. And with the type of work that you guys do, I could see that definitely afflicting the knitter. Also with shoulders rolled forward, that is a big deal. Those nerves get down to your hands and fingers, and they have to go through your shoulders first. So some tightness in the pectorals can definitely cause that. So, you know, if you got pain that's not going away, it can't be managed with a little hot pack or ice pack, or if it's persistent, if it's waking you up at night, if you got numbness and tinglies that are, you know, they're very present, they're not going away very quickly. If you have any other type of joint pain, you notice some swelling, maybe the joints are no longer looking not speaking in terms of chiropractic aligned, but just aligned in general. That could be an early onset of some arthritis. So those are things to look at as well. So, you know, all the major stuff that you would associate with injuries, pain not going away, and then swelling or numbness, tinglies, stiffness, stuff that's just, you know, it kind of seems unusual for where your body is. And I think most people have a pretty good idea of what they expect out of their body.
Do you have any stretches or anything like that that we can share, maybe videos or just anything you can describe that would be a good exercise to do? A lot of times I stop and I'll stretch my fingers back, pull my fingers back to stretch the front of my forearms just because that feels good. But anything like that that you can recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. The big thing is if you are potentially having some nerve-related stuff, whether that's numbness, tinglies, or maybe you are feeling a little clumsy in your hands, I'm not a big advocate of stretching at that point. At that point, you probably need to get assessed to find out if it's okay to stretch. If those muscles are tight and then that nerve is no longer sliding or moving through the tissue well, you could stretch and potentially make that worse. So that's a big thing for me. I've had a handful of clients that actually had to take them off stretching programs because they were putting the cart in front of the horse on that situation. So for me, that's where the soft tissue work comes in. And I use some non-stretching style soft tissue work, whether for me, I prefer the dry needling in that aspect. But to release the muscle where we don't have to stretch it to release it, so we're not irritating that nerve. And then once the muscle is more relaxed, then we can get into some things where we might move that nerve. So just as a little caveat there, I definitely would defer to getting to an expert if you're experiencing that. Otherwise, if you're someone that maybe just is trying to be preventative, for sure you can get in there and stretch. You can just use your other hand, reach across, pull fingers back towards extension, which would be the backside of your wrist, taking your fingers in that direction. That can help stretch out those forearm flexor muscles. A little self-massage into your thenar imminence, which is the big muscly portion below your thumb. You can get in there and just do a little light massaging as well. You might use an implement instead of your own hands because you're doing enough with your hands as it is. So, you know, you might take a golf ball or something that has a more of a big blunt kind of object that you can use and just kind of lightly dig into that area. That should feel very comfortable. I like to tell my clients that use that stuff, you're not going to fix it with a golf ball or whatever the object is that we're using. Just try to get in there and do a little bit of work. It's more for maintenance. So, because that stuff can leave you sore if you're too aggressive. You can do that same thing with maybe like a lacrosse ball, a tennis ball, a baseball, any round object really that will stick on your forearms. You can set the ball on the table and put your forearm on the ball and use the other hand to apply some pressure and just roll back and forth. Just be careful because you can run into your nerves. So if you feel some zingies, like, you know, when you whack your funny bone, just stay off that spot. But the goal is you're just looking for those tender, tight, ropey spots. Oftentimes it kind of is a good hurt, if you know what I mean. So kind of identify those areas. Outside of that, you can definitely use the tennis ball, lacrosse ball up into your pec muscle there in the front of your chest, on the back side of your shoulders. And those you can just do up against the wall. Pretty easy stuff. I like to use the where a door would be, because then you have somewhere to place your head. So if you're going to roll out your pec muscle, just right up against the edge of a door. So if you're going to do your right shoulder or right pec, your right shoulder would be lined up with the door and your head would be through. You could do that. Turn around, roll the backside, just stay off the bony spots. You can roll in those areas as well, all along the shoulder blade, up into the kind of the lower base of your neck. Those are all applicable there. And then just some simple pec stretches. You know, I didn't invent the pec stretch. There's lots of great videos out there. Just be sensible with it. I want to say we might have a video of a pec stretch. We're kind of halfway through getting our exercise library up, so I have to confirm that with you, but we might have a pec stretch that we've done. I know we've done one. I just don't know if it's on the internet yet. But if not, I can help guide you as to a good recommendation on YouTube. But just gentle, should feel comfortable. It should never leave you feeling worse afterwards. If it does, then that's a red flag in my mind that either it's the wrong thing or maybe there is a call to action there where we need to see a provider to work on some of those things. But pec stretch, forearm stretch, cognizant of posture, maybe do a little shoulder blade strengthening. That would be a good thing as well because we just spend so much time hunched over. And then just using some other implements to work on the tissue.
Well, I appreciate it. I know it worked for me, so keep up the good work.
Okay, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know about the tingling thing.
Yeah, that's really good to know. And I had that happen before, previously after another injury I had. And so don't rub on a tingly spot. Let it relax.
Yes. Okay. That's really good. Thank you for that, Casey. And we will link to all of his information in the show notes.
And he's got a video that we can link to that's about posture that will be really helpful.
We're all going to watch that. Mm-hmm. All of us are going to watch his video on posture. We can all do better with that.
Yeah. Because I know sometimes when I'm like snuggled up in a ball knitting, I know I'm like, this is terrible. I need to sit up straight.
Do you realize how much better you look when you sit with good posture? Mm-hmm. Not you, but like...
As I straighten up.
We're both straightening up. When you think about just how much nicer your clothes look on you and when you have good posture, how much better you look. Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that like you instantly lose 5 pounds or something if you stand up straight.
You stand up straight or do you lose 10? You bend over backwards. Maybe not. Okay, are we ready to magically turn knitting questions into knitting answers?
I believe we are.
Okay.
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. I'm so glad Very Pink has expanded into podcast. I only wish they could be a little longer. We got your messages.
We're doing it.
Your enthusiasm and passion for knitting really comes across in the podcast, as well as the fun you two obviously have when chatting, which makes them so enjoyable.
We don't like talking to each other.
You should hear the offline stuff.
how mean we are to each other when the recording equipment isn't going. Yeah.
Here's my question. Is there any trick to knowing when your work is big enough to switch from DPNs to circular needles? I usually just eyeball it and hope for the best. Sometimes it is perfect timing, and sometimes I end up switching a few rounds too early. I figured that if there is any trick to this, you two would know it. Thank you, Tamara from Zurich.
Thank you, Tamara. Yes, there kind of is a trick. There's kind of a trick. You're switching from your knitting's getting bigger, and you started at double-pointed needles, and you're switching to circular needles. And I'm assuming that she's saying switching to 16-inch circular needles because that would be the first size up. And the way that I always do that is I look at the work. Is my work as big as an adult head? Because 16-inch circular needles are perfect for adult size hats, right? So if I have enough stitches to fit around my head, then I have enough to switch to 16-inch circular needles. Now, if you're talking about switching to longer needles, like 24-inch or 32, you can always just use the magic loop method. We can link to my video on that. You can always use the magic loop method on the longer on the longer circular needles until you have enough stitches for it to fit around, assuming that you're increasing the whole time and it is eventually going to fit around. That is my trick. You have enough stitches for 16-inch circulars if you have enough stitches to fit around your head.
For your head. Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. I am thinking of buying some interchangeable needles. I need to know which ones can be fitted with lifelines. I'm frying my brain by making an Estonian lace shawl. Yeah, you are. And right now, I am frantically inserting lifelines every few rows using a needle. There has to be a better way. Thanks so much for the podcast and videos. Knitting nerds forever. Heather from Chula Vista, California.
Okay, Heather. What she's asking is the kind of interchangeable needles that have a hole in the base of the needle that you can run some really fine thread through. And so then when you knit across, you kind of drag a lifeline with you through them. Do you understand what I'm saying, Case?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know that the needles that I use, Knitter's Pride, they all have that hole. But what I'm going to say is you don't have to run a lifeline that way. I know you're saying that you're doing it on the needle. You're doing it with a tapestry needle every few rows. She's being very careful. That's very good. Are you sliding the stitches to the cord when you do it? Because if you have a bunch of stitches and you slide it to the cord on the circular needle, then you take your tapestry needle threaded with some lace weight yarn, and you can run it through a bunch of stitches all at once with a tapestry needle. It shouldn't be a pain in the neck, right?
I mean, unless it's super fine. If it's a lace shawl, it might be super fine.
But still, if you put it on the cord, she is using interchangeable needles. If you put it on the cord, there should be enough room for a tapestry needle to run through like 30 stitches at once. And so it shouldn't take you long to get through as many stitches you have across the shawl. But to answer your question, I use Knitter's Pride needles. I know that they have that hole in there. I don't actually put lifelines through my work using that hole ever. I tried it once and the needle didn't pull as smoothly through the work and it held me up and I was worried it was going to make my gauge look different on that row. And so I tried it one time and never again.
That sounds like a recipe for knots or I don't know. It makes me nervous.
I know that some people use dental floss when they mm-hmm. do it that way. And if you're using one of those slippery dental flosses, it will slide through without snagging on anything. It does seem like there's a chance of something going. Just the fact that it might change my gauge for that one row mm-hmm. makes me not want to do it. Makes me want to just pull the lifeline through after the stitches are already worked so it won't affect that row of knitting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Hi, Stacey and Casey, longtime follower of your videos. Thank you so much for basically teaching me how to knit. Background on my question, a friend and I recently traveled to Iceland where I found a lovely local yarn store and bought some Icelandic yarn to knit as us each a hat. I will be doing your Learn to Knit a Fair Isle pattern. My problem is the Icelandic sheep are very hardy creatures who have grown themselves some very scratchy yarn. It will be very warm and durable, but it is not soft by any description of the word. Is there any way to line the ribbing section of the hat to avoid scratching my forehead off and not lose the function of the ribbing?
Scratching her forehead off. Her forehead is just completely going to get worn off her face.
She's just
going to
scratch it off. Thanks so much for any advice. Loving the new podcast. My cat Ralphie says meow to the boys. Amy from Fort St. John, British Columbia, Canada.
Okay. Hi, Amy. What a fun trip to go to Iceland and buy yarn.
I know.
I want to go to Iceland and buy yarn.
Yeah, let's go.
I did just use that Lopi yarn. Just used it. Last year, I used the Lopi yarn to make my Arrowhead cardigan sweater, and it is a scratchy yarn. It maybe is not an ideal hat yarn because it is scratchy, but you're asking about lining the hat, and I can think of a couple different things you can do here. One is that you can use a softer yarn for the brim, the part that actually is around your head.
Mm-hmm.
The other is to do a lining this way. Find a really soft merino beautiful yarn that you want against your skin. Knit in the ribbing or whatever that you're going to use in the cuff. Make sure it's a color that you like with the Icelandic yarn that you bought. And knit that for the same length as the cuff. Do one purl row and then switch to the Icelandic yarn and knit the rest of the cuff or knit the cuff again. So what's going to happen is that purl row is going to be a fold line. So the inside of the hat is the soft yarn and the outside of the hat is the merino yarn.
Mm-hmm. I just did a hat like that.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
How'd it work out?
It's really nice.
Okay.
And it makes it a nice, like, I like the edging so you don't have to have, you know, mine was all stockinette. It didn't have a ribbing. So it keeps it real straight.
It does. It looks really good and it is double warm around your ears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't have to switch yarns to do that, but that one purl row makes it a really sharp fold
mm-hmm.
right there.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
I had some yarn that my mother-in-law brought back from Ireland that was like that. It was super scratchy. And so I looked for a wool wash that had lanolin in it, which my Yucalan says it's got lanolin
yeah.
in it. And that helps a little bit, but not nearly enough.
It makes the wool softer, you think?
I think a little bit.
Okay.
But I also was, this is a funny story.
Okay.
So,
this I'm already laughing.
I was either had just finished or was in the process of breastfeeding. And when you're breastfeeding, things get chapped. And so there's this ointment that's 100% lanolin.
Uh-huh.
So I put that on my fingers while I was knitting because it was like so scratchy, it was irritating my hands to use.
Okay.
So I would put that on my fingers and knit with it and hope that the lanolin would get into the yarn. But most
yeah.
of all, it was protecting my hands
right.
from the scratchy yarn.
How did the lanolin work on your hands?
It was nice. I mean, that's what's nice about it as an ointment. It just kind of evaporates and it's real, it doesn't smell and it's, you know, all natural.
I think I actually have a lotion bar
mm-hmm.
that has lanolin in it.
Yeah, that's another thing you could do because her hands are going to hurt.
With using that yarn.
It, yeah.
My hands didn't hurt making my Arrowhead cardigan.
Was it scratchy?
Uh-huh. I mean, that Lopi yarn is not merino.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some roughness to it, but it's perfect for... Because that pattern was steeked, meaning it was knit in a tube and then cut into a cardigan. And it was steeked and it is a total outerwear thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that nothing really is ever against my skin.
Yeah.
It's just warm and pretty. And it's there's a use for scratchy yarns like that.
Yeah. This was like probably made by hand by some small farm or something because it wasn't a brand or anything like that.
Oh, it wasn't.
Yeah. So.
Definitely souvenir yarn that way.
Yeah. So.
Okay, we're ready.
Anyway. Hi, Stacy. In your next podcast, could you address this issue? I watched your video where you cut the steeking off.
How funny. I was just talking about
a Fair Isle swatch. I was wondering what happens to the caries on the back. Wouldn't they be loose when cut? I enjoy the videos and the podcast very much. Thanks for all of them. I play them over for the knitting company. Mickey from Wisconsin.
Hi, Mickey. That is so funny that this question came up next. I did not look ahead and see the next question. But when you're using a rough yarn and you're doing a project that has steeking in it, which is oftentimes a pullover that's cut and made into a cardigan or something that's cut into a V-neck shape, when you're working Fair Isle and you're steeking and the actual cut, yes, you will cut through the floats on the back of the work. You cut through everything. And the reason that we use a scratchy yarn is because that the scratchy yarn sticks to itself and it's not going to unravel because of the work you've done ahead of time to make the steek, to knit the steek in, and the yarn that you've chosen that has the extra stick to it so that it won't unravel. I can link to my steeking video in the show notes for more information.
Steeking scares me.
You just set yourself up right for it.
I know. I just haven't done it.
It's kind of exciting.
Okay. Hello, Stacy and Casey. Enjoying the podcast because I can listen while I knit instead of being distracted by watching a screen. My question, I'm making my first large project, which is a poncho. I'm using hand-dyed yarn, which is produced in dye lots of 5 hanks. I read 2 different ways to ensure random color distribution. I'm leaning toward the front side in one dye lot and knit the back side in the other dye lot. Or would you work from 2 balls of different dye lots at the same time, alternating a few rows? If alternating, how many rows before changing? And is that going to make my edge look crappy with all the ends because I'm not doing fringe on the poncho? Thank you for being so accessible to answer questions while being entertaining. Valerie from Jamestown, New York.
Okay, Valerie, thank you for that. Yes, when we're using a hand-dyed yarn that has a little bit of variegation in the color, it's always a good idea to switch between 2 balls of yarn so that you don't get crazy color pooling. And I always just do 2 rounds or rows. 2 rows means down and back to the same place that you started, and 2 rounds is just, you know, 2 rounds in the spiral of circular knitting. That is usually enough. That's enough to keep a pooling pattern broken up so that it looks really good. Now, the thing that I wanted to say is you said alternating, will it look crappy with all the ends because I'm not doing a fringe on the poncho? You don't have to cut the yarn every time. That would make so much more work.
Oh, God.
I know. Casey just fainted. You can just carry the color up the side of the work, and it's not going to look sloppy. It's actually going to look really nice, and we'll link to my video in carrying colors. In the video, I show how to carry colors, two different colors for stripes, but it's the same technique in use, just alternating between two balls of yarn of the same color. Just kind of flop one working yarn over the other and knit down and back or a couple of rounds. That's it. Yeah, you just carry both colors at the same time.
Cool. Okay, when a pattern says ending with a wrong side row, do you knit the wrong side and quit, or do you knit the right side and quit before working the wrong side? Jenny from Texas.
This question is such a pain in my neck. Seriously, not because you asked it, but because I have the same question too.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense. And end with the wrong side row.
That tells me that you knit that wrong side row. That's how I interpret it.
Okay, this is what I do. Well, first of all, when I'm designing patterns, I say, repeat these two rows ending after knitting row two.
Yeah.
Ending is, I always make it really clear that you have to knit that thing and then you're done with it and not leave it up in the air for interpretation. But this is what I do, Jenny, because it's not clear. And sometimes you actually look and it meant the other thing. So you look at the next row. Is the next row a right side row or wrong side row?
Right.
Look ahead in the pattern to see what the next row is, and then you can figure out what the last row is. I wish there was some language. I think English language is limited when you try to express this one thing. Other things too, probably.
But yes, not just this.
Okay, so yeah, just look at the next row, Jenny.
Okay.
One more question?
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. First, I want to say I love the podcasts. I download them every Thursday morning before work and listen to them on the way to work. My favorite days of the week are Wednesdays and Thursdays. That's so nice.
That's really nice.
Well, that just makes the middle of the week so much better. My question is, I want to knit a sweater. What would Stacey suggest as a first-time sweater pattern for me? I'm an intermediate level knitter. I've been a little intimidated on trying one. Thanks. April H., Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Hi, April. I have a lot of beginner knitter sweater tutorials, and for the most part, they're top-down raglans, and I can link to a few of those in the show notes depending on what you're looking for, if you want to make a woman's sweater or a kid's sweater or a man's sweater, whatever. But if you're looking on Ravelry and you want to expand the search, top-down raglans are a great place to start, and it's because they're knit in one piece without seaming, and it's really easy to get the right fit on a top-down raglan sweater because you just keep knitting the increases until the sweater is big enough around the chest or bust and around under the arms so that the sweater meets under the arms before you get down into the tube of the body. They're just really easy. So I'll put some links to my tutorials in the show notes, and you can also just do a filtered search on Ravelry for sweater. And then I think you want to go to construction top down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a searchable thing.
Yeah.
Because that's the only kind of sweater I like to knit.
Yeah, they're my favorite too. I can think of one sweater tutorial I have out there that's actually a sweater in pieces. And they're nice because of the amount of structure that you get, like in the shoulders and stuff. But as far as like being the knitter and knowing that you're going to have a successful outcome with a sweater, top-down raglan is the way to go.
For sure. You know, my husband's family has some famous connection to Prince Edward Island.
Oh, is
like
that right?
Some uncle or somebody was like governor. Or I don't know what they have.
Somebody, you have no idea, but Prince Edward Island is some connection.
There's a Bernard who was from Prince Edward Island, and he was some kind of famous guy.
Oh, so wow.
Look him up, April.
Do you think you're related to April H?
By marriage, maybe.
Okay. Your kids are.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. Okay. Our sponsor this week is The Woolery, and Yeah, we will link to a video of using the Strauss ball winder and Swift, the actual ball winder and Swift that I love and use. And if you didn't get one for Christmas, there is a special offer. I actually don't have the information on the special offer here, but I'll have it when we set this video live, and it will be in the show notes. All the more reason to visit the show notes. The Strauss ball winder and Swift is kind of like, when you're tired of buying cheap plastic things and you're ready to invest in the one that you're going to have for the rest of your life, that's the one that I have. And it's all made in the U.S. of wood and looks really good. It works really well. Again, the link in the show notes. And many thanks to The Woolery for sponsoring this episode. Casey, if someone wants to find you online, what do they do?
My website is kcknits.com, and it's the letter K and the letter C.
Okay. And if someone wants to find me online, they can find me at my YouTube channel, Very Pink Knits, or you can go to verypink.com. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, there are my social media buttons there. And I haven't mentioned the newsletter in a while, but you can also sign up for the newsletter down there. We only put the newsletter out 4 times a year. It's not spammy or anything. It's, I think it's nice. I think we do a good job on the newsletter. I think that's it for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.